This episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky soul or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
Batter Up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 164 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I'm joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this week, the Mets are so back.
They're good again.
Yay! We did it!
Inconsistent.
We got it.
After weeks of like miserable game, like playing by the Mets and just like terrible slogs of podcasts talking about the Mets when we didn't want to talk about the Mets have given us something good to talk about. For once, and it's lovely. They're finally playing like the 2022 Mets, like the team that we thought that we were getting. This is what we thought we were getting. And we got it so strongly this week.
Well, thank God, because there's only so many ways you can say the Mets are bad.
I know. It's just been a horrible slog with the pitching. And the offense, like, you know, wasn't really consistent, I guess. Like it would be okay for times, but it never
fired on all cylinders. Like, it wasn't nearly enough that they could guarantee a win when they did eke out a decent pitching performance.
Exactly. And, you know, the week obviously started poorly after losing yet again on Monday, which is hopefully the last time we see David Peterson on a big league mound for some time, and opening the series against the Rays with a loss as well, in which Justin Verlander pitched a bad game. So, like, the vibes were, like, peak down because in addition to all their horrible play from the week before, the Reds series, the Nationals series, all that nonsense, Verlander pitched poorly in the opener against the Rays, and it was
that was a real gut punch too, because you did want to see him take some little step forward, and then he just did not do that.
Exactly. It was a really bad performance. The Mets are, and in both those games, you know, the Mets were down from the jump, which was seemingly what was happening every single day. The Mets were just giving up first inning runs all the time.
Well, they still are, to be
and they
fair.
Still
exactly.
are saying,
no, that is still happening. A persistent problem that the Mets rarely score first, even in games they win. They're constantly coming from behind, which made for some exciting games this week, but it's still not sustainable.
It's not ideal, no.
No. But they did, after Tuesday, rip off a 5-game winning streak.
In like the most dramatic way possible. They can't be normal.
Yeah, no, they can't be normal. All 5 of those wins were by one run. 2 of them were in extra innings.
How many were walk-offs? Was it also 2?
I think it was just 2. Those 2.
Okay.
It was Pete and Lindor, I think.
Pete and Lindor, the 2 extra inning ones.
Yes.
So starting with Wednesday's walk-off victory, in which Kodai Senga pitched his best game as a Met, he struck out a dozen Rays hitters, and the Mets came from behind on 3 separate occasions to win it, which culminated with Pete Alonso's walk-off 3-run homer in the 10th inning, which was that, I mean, Wednesday was the Mets' best win of the season to that point by far. Like, they hadn't had any exciting wins like that. Like, that was the first game that I was like, all right, this is like something out of the 2022 season. Like, the 2022 Mets are in there. I see them. They're in there.
I mean, if every season can get a little bit of magic at some point or another, and it just felt like there had been none. Like, no magic. There were some hard-fought victories, but nothing magical at all.
Yeah. And then Wednesday's win was like a magical one. And then they ripped off like four more excellent wins after that, including like exciting wins. And Wednesday, the other thing about Wednesday's game was that, like I said, they came from behind on three separate occasions. And the first two times they came from behind were home runs from Mark Vientos and Francisco Alvarez, the now so-called baby Mets. which I think have played a huge role in this resurgence. It's just been, you know, I will admit when I am wrong. I tweeted when the Mets brought up Mark Vientos, obviously Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty were obvious call-ups, extremely obvious call-ups. They had a need at the position that those two guys were playing, and they called them up. And Beatty arguably should have been in the big leagues to start with. Vientos was a less obvious call-up, I thought. Like, there wasn't really an obvious roster fit for him. They were going to need... They ultimately sent down Luis Guillorme, which, I mean, is fine. Like, obviously, the Mets are playing well right now, so don't change a thing. But, like, I felt like that was kind of an unfortunate thing. Like, Luis Guillorme kind of drew the short straw here. I felt kind of bad about that. But I suppose in the dire straits that the Mets were in, they could not afford to continue to roster a defense first utility infielder who does not provide much offensive pop, to a team that was struggling to score. So they brought up Mark Vientos. He contributed immediately. And the Mets started playing better. So I'll admit when I was wrong. I said it was like shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic, and they were just making this Mark Vientos move for the sake of making it, which is what I thought at the time because the vibes were at an all-time low. But I was wrong.
Do you sort of think that's what they were doing?
It just worked.
I think it was just kind of like that. That's the magic. And also, like, Vientos is the one of the three that isn't really like done anything yet, but he's also been up for the shortest amount of time. But, you know, I just feel like I don't think you were actually wrong on that. I just think we did not account for the possibility of magic.
It's true.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Maggie on this one, like, because I still feel like he has to prove himself because he was so overmatched last season that I'm still not convinced he's a viable big leaguer. Whereas I think the other two have done enough to prove that they are.
Yes, I agree with that.
And again, like, even if it is just vibes, I mean, this team's vibes were so, so bad. Like, really, really, like, that. I mean, I think that could be just what the doctor ordered. Like, that could have been enough.
It was a 180. It's just a complete 180 vibe shift.
Well, it's like the Dumb and Dumber. Like, just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, you go out and do something like this and totally redeem yourself. That's what they did. It was like complete, like, they took, like, and how, like, suckers are we? Like, this is all it takes to pull us right back in.
I mean, oh yeah, like, baby, the Mets are in playoff position right now. Yeah, I'm just saying.
The crowd was electric. The crowds all came back to Citi. They said it felt like the playoff game at Citi Field.
Like, after I bet a bunch of those people were like, I am never going back to see this team again.
Like, it takes so little to pull us back in. But you know what? I mean...
Yeah, no, sign me up.
Yeah, I was going to say, how could you deny that, like Maggie said, there's always that little bit of magic that this team somehow, some way finds, and it's contagious. I mean, it's palpable. You can feel it. Like, even when they were behind, it wasn't like the other games. You could tell something had shifted these past five games, where in the past year, like, they're taking terrible at-bats, like, this game is over. But this time, like, when the game was tied, and then all of a sudden the defense just started, like, making every play on the field, like, it was, like, just incredible to see, like, how bought in they were. Because even when they were losing, it also reflected in their defense and their at-bats, just them, like, you know, looking miserable on the bench. But now everything changed. It wasn't just, you know, the offense. It was literally the entire team buying in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's the crowds like flocking back to Citi Field reminds me of a tweet that I made recently. This was like when the vibes were still really bad. And the original tweet that I quote tweeted was clearly about Succession. Now, I don't watch Succession, so I don't have like any context for all the memes. It's just like the most like online show right now that like everybody's talking about. But someone tweeted about the latest episode of Succession. Brilliant, true to itself, hated every single millisecond, will never rewatch. Congratulations and fuck you to everyone involved. And I
saw you tweet that.
And said me after every Mets game.
That was perfect.
Brilliant, true to itself, hated every single millisecond, will never rewatch. Congratulations and fuck you to everyone involved. That was exactly how I was feeling at the moment, and all it took was these like a stupid couple of walk-off victories and like Pete Alonso being Pete Alonso to pull me right back in again.
Well, and if we're talking magic, I mean, it starts and ends with Pete. Like, yeah, absolutely. He has some sort of a spiritual tie to this team. Like, I swear his vibes are the team vibes and vice versa. Like, yeah. You cannot have one without the other. I cannot explain it.
Yes, which is why he cannot possibly get to free agency, because no, what God, will happen? No. Like, I don't know what this team looks like without Pete Alonso on it.
When
like,
you find a player who will hump your dugout railing, you keep him.
Yeah, exactly. You keep that man. You keep that man. You do everything you can to keep
you
that
reinforce
man.
That railing. Yes. The long season.
Yes.
Like, when do they all eventually tumble onto the field because he broke
it? Oh, it's happening. He's
it's
breaking
sort of like
the whole
the
thing.
Inverse of that Ike Davis move.
Yes.
Where they all come out instead of him falling in.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, the Mets
and, like,
feel...
I don't want Pete to suffer, but, like, if this is how he plays, like, high on cold medicine...
Oh,
we
yeah,
really
got that man
to get well.
I mean, that is basically Greenies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If that's the new sticky stuff, then I guess I'm on board. But yeah, I mean, like, it's not just the baby Mets contributing, although, like, and the thing is that, like, Francisco Alvarez, so we could talk about Francisco Alvarez for a second, because he's been fantastic. He was a huge part of these of all of these exciting wins. And the Mets might very well send him down in like 2 weeks, which would be a crime.
I have to tell myself they're not going to do that. I mean, assuming that he does not have a massive cold streak the next couple of weeks. I still hope they wouldn't, but I could kind of understand it. But barring that, I just have to believe that this team is built a little different than that. Oh my God, don't prove me wrong, Mets, please.
Yeah, please.
Don't be that stupid.
That would be a Wilpon. This would be a Wilpon thing. If they send him down again because he has options and the other guys don't, this would be a Wilpon thing.
But the PR nightmare at this point, like, he doesn't belong in Syracuse. There's nothing for him in Syracuse at this point.
Nope.
No, his defense has been great.
Fun. Yeah.
He's built a good rapport with the pitchers. They're happy to have him out there.
Yeah, remember when he didn't start the season in the big league because he needed to work on his defense, and now he's like one of the best framers in the league?
Well, and so Scherzer said he specifically wanted to work with him. So, he's been there every day, catcher at this point.
He knows the staff better than Narvaez now.
Yeah, so how can he go from being your everyday catcher to being demoted to Syracuse?
I don't know. I'm just nervous. I'm nervous. Maybe it's Wilpon PTSD and these concerns are unfounded, but I'm nervous about it.
They probably were thinking it because for some reason they didn't want to lose Gary Sanchez. But at this point, he's proven to them, don't send me back down. He's played his way into staying in the big league. So now it's on them to figure it out.
I am not nervous about Gary Sanchez. I do think that was just a temporary thing, and they just called because Michael Perez has options, and like Gary Sanchez is just as good of an option as Michael Perez. Like, that's fine. And he was gonna opt out, and so they called him up, and he's just here for whoever comes back first, Nito or Narvaez. That's fine. I'm worried about when both Nito and Narvaez are back, what they do about it. They have to trade Nito or do something because they cannot send Alvarez down. They can't do it. It would be horrendous if they did that. Inexcusable shit.
Yeah.
You're going to jerk around your future catcher for Tomas Nito,
who they signed to an extension and bought out his arbitration years and gave Narvaez this player option, which he's almost certainly going to exercise. Like, they've trapped themselves into this situation.
Yeah, it was a pretty it's a head scratcher how they went about that.
We said the whole time that it was weird.
Seem like a lot of catchers.
Yeah, like
if they made the whole team out of catchers?
Like, I always felt that was the most puzzling offseason move that they made was the Narvaez signing, and especially the player option and the Nito extension. I felt like that was strange behavior. I felt like that was a team that did not believe in Francisco Alvarez as its future. But now it's like they've gotten to the point where it's undeniable that he is the future. So like,
and certainly that's the better problem to have.
Sure, of course,
but it's annoying. It's so annoying.
That nervous feeling that they're not going to make the right decisions still remains.
Well, I kind of feel like it wasn't so bad because Alvarez is still so young, so they kind of gave them that safety net. That if, you know, he did need another year in the minors or whatever, or, you know, if they weren't planning to call him up until September, you know, this year, if he really was still struggling, they did build in a safety net for that, but he proved them all wrong. So now you have to work around that. You can't put that on him that right. He sped up your timeline.
And I suppose like locking up Nito for cheap, like, does increase his trade value in the sense that backup catchers who can frame, who can defend, a team is always going to be looking for that. But the issue is that with Nito's eye problem, he like basically erased all that trade value by not playing like a major leaguer for the first part of this season. I'm feeling increasingly like that was not really his fault because he had this eye issue, but like that's still a problem because if Nito had just been like regular Tomas Nito, which is like a bad hitter but not an unrosterable one, and a very good defender, if he had just been regular Tomas Nito this year, then the Mets wouldn't have had like an issue dealing him, I don't think, for something useful. But now they might have an issue dealing him for something useful.
Yeah, who knows if this really corrected the issue. But you hope it does, but we don't have proof yet that his eyes are fixed.
Didn't he hit a double or a homer in his like first at bat? In his minor league rehab assignment.
I mean, I imagine they're going to buy themselves as much time as possible.
Yes.
And like give, you know, Nito the longest possible rehab stint and like see if maybe like Gary Sanchez like twists his ankle or something, like just trying to buy a couple minutes here and there. And then Sanchez will be the first to go. And then when Narvaez is back, I mean, they'll do the same thing. They'll give him as long as possible and then see if, I imagine it's probably a few weeks, like maybe 2 to 3 weeks before it's like a true immediate crunch. Someone's got to go.
Yeah.
So it is still time. Again, I like, seriously though, Alvarez, if he has like an 0-for-20, like forget it, he's gone. It would not be a good moment for a cold snap, but I will try to will into the universe the opposite.
Yeah, please make the right choice, Mets. Don't like
please hit 1,000 home runs starting tomorrow.
Yeah,
well, that's the other problem though, is he's the only legit power threat outside of Pete in the lineup.
Yeah,
every other person in the lineup can run into one every once in a while, but I guess maybe Vientos, but again, he really hasn't shown it at the big league level. So you need another legit power bat in that lineup that have been, like, he's already what, like third in the team in home runs?
I think so, yeah, behind Pete and Lindor. Lindor is a legit power threat, I'd say. Not quite to the level of Pete Alonso, obviously, but like he actually has a respectable number of home runs as opposed to everybody else who has like two or three.
Yeah, so I don't know, like they were desperately lacking another power bat and now he gives you that. Do you want to take that away again?
Yeah, I sure as heck don't. The Mets, part of what is fueling, it has been fueling these victories where they're coming from behind, winning by one run, has been the Mets are finally hitting home runs.
Yep. No coincidence, I don't think.
It's not just, although Pete Alonso is primarily responsible, it's not just Pete Alonso. Like, everyone's hitting home runs. Like, Francisco Lindor hit a home run. Brandon Nimmo hit a home run. Eduardo Escobar hit a home run.
Marte
hit a home run yesterday. That was the difference in the game. After they went behind, he hit a two-run go-ahead homer. Like,
Marte Starling getting it Marte. Together would low-key be another Clutch. Massive boost to this. Because he is starting to look a little more reasonable.
Starling Marte looks extremely back, his boneheaded pickoff aside on the bases. He looks very back. Like,
although
he's finally hitting the ball hard.
He was out the second time too.
Oh, I think he was out the second time. Oh, they got away with that. They got away with that.
The base running all weekend was pretty special.
Yeah, questionable. On
it was
both
something
sides.
I haven't seen much of before.
On both sides, the Guardians also ran the bases horribly and ran themselves into a double play that was, like, basically the reason they lost that game.
Yeah, that was crucial.
Yeah. On that Ahmed Rosario liner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it was atrocious base running by both the Mets and the Guardians in that series. Luckily, the Mets came out on top and swept. I hope to God that now we're not playing the Guardians for a while again. Like, can we, like, not do the trade discourse every time the Mets play the Guardians? Like,
well, I have a question for you, Allison. Are they going to play the Mariners this year?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. I hope
they're
going
to play every single team every single year, and we get to have it with every single team the Mets have done a big trade with.
We get to rehash over and over. I can't wait until Pete Crow Armstrong is in the majors.
Oh, there's another one.
The Mets play the Cubs this week, so I'm sure there's good. Even though Pete Crow Armstrong is not there, I'm sure that we're going to have discourse.
Yep,
because we have to have discourse about.
But the Mariners, that's the one I'm not looking forward to, man.
No.
Oh my God, how many years does Ever. It have to pass before I can stop looking at, like, people tweeting Jared Kelenic Statcast data for 30 plate appearances? I'm so over it.
Well, it's okay. Both teams benefited. It's fine.
Whatever. I don't care.
No, I love Edwin Diaz, and I'm very happy with Edwin Diaz. So I legit don't care.
I love Francisco Lindor. I don't care what Andrés Giménez and Ahmed Rosario are doing. I wish them the best.
Yes.
I do not care.
I was really happy
they
were doing great last year. That warmed my heart. They seem like decent guys. I'm happy they were doing well. I'm kind of bummed they're not doing so well this year. I'm super duper happy that Francisco Lindor is ours and he's awesome. So I feel like, what is there to argue about?
Nothing.
It's okay if both teams benefit. You don't have to win a trade.
Yeah, like, you don't have to be so obsessed with winning the trade. Like,
the,
it's really
the point
okay.
of a trade is that both teams get better.
Yeah.
That's literally why people do trades.
I will say Ahmed Rosario's defense in this series, woof.
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is the Ahmed Rosario that I remember. seems like the same guy.
Yeah.
Very fast. Good hitter. Very bad at shortstop. I don't know why they moved Giménez off shortstop to play Ahmed Rosario there. That's questionable to me.
Yeah. Giménez
is the way better defensive player.
Just goes to show you that it's not just the Mets that do weird, stupid things.
Weird things. I think the other big positive to take away from this week, in addition to just like all the vibes and the fun excitement, is that after Tuesday's debacle with Verlander, he bounced back and pitched eight brilliant innings yesterday.
Oh, he was so good.
Well, that was the thing with both of them. We finally got the two aces that we were expecting. And the fact that they did it back-to-back on the same day
That was pretty cool.
That was special, yeah.
It was special, like, to get, like, so Saturday was a rain out, and so Sunday became a doubleheader, and you got Scherzer and Verlander pitching back-to-back. Back-to-back, like, marquee pitching matchups. You got Bibby against, or Bibby. I'm not sure if it's pronounced Bibby or Bibby. I think it was Bibby. It's Bibby against Scherzer, and Bibby's really good, and Bieber against Verlander, and obviously Bieber's one of the best pitchers in the American League. So that was very fun to get those two pitching matchups, and they were, as advertised, they were both pitchers' duels. So that was very fun, and to have the Mets come out on top and have Scherzer and Verlander both pitch brilliant games was what we've been waiting for. Like, this is what the Mets signed up for.
Well, that was like this. That one spring training game that Buck had Jake start and Scherzer finish. Yeah. And that was like there was nothing that could like ever top that, because they were both like brilliant. And it was like, oh, now it's all downhill from here. Because then Jake, of course, got hurt, and then we never had them like in the rotation at the same time. So I feel like this was just like a little bit of karma, because we lost all of that last year, and we lost it already for a chunk of this season.
God, I hope that doubleheader was not like the one taste we get of our co-aces. It's kind of like the one turn through the rotation of the five aces. I hope this isn't another iteration of that. I need it to be like a lasting feeling.
Yeah, like, please, not just once. Give us something.
Yeah.
Like, since we were robbed of it last year.
This is what we need for the team to be successful, like, straight out. Like, nothing, I mean, like, obviously all these other things are important, like Francisco Alvarez continuing to produce in the majors, Brett Beatty continuing to produce in the majors, Starling Marte turning it around, Pete Alonso continuing to hit massive, massive bombs. Like, all of this is very fun and very important, but I would argue that none of it matters if Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander are not themselves. That is primarily what the Mets need to be successful, and hopefully we are there finally.
There's something about Verlander on the mound that reminds me of Matt Harvey, and I can't pinpoint what it is. I don't know if it's his windup, his mound presence, or something, but I don't know. There's like very, although maybe I guess Mount Harvey would be him, since Justin Verlander came first.
He came first, Linda.
Maybe he modeled himself after Verlander. Who knows? But I don't know. It's just, it was weird. It was, I turned on the game and it felt like I was watching Matt Harvey pitch.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
He's just a vintage ace in a way that you don't see a lot. Like, it's just like he's been the same pitcher basically his whole career, and he's had success his whole career with just doing the thing. Like, he's very good. I ESPN, as much as I hate their broadcasts, did show one really cool graphic where it showed like basically Verlander's like vertical release point is like the highest in like the major leagues. Like, he releases the ball at the top and it just drops down. It has like the most movement from top to bottom, because it drops from so high, because he just goes he goes 100% over the top. There's no like side arm slot, none of that stuff. He just pitches completely over the top. And so the ball comes from so high up and it gets so far down. It's kind of nuts to watch.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare to try to hit.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I would pee my pants.
Although we should also talk about Senga too.
What a brilliant performance Senga had.
Yeah, like we Senga kind of got lost in the shuffle, but really, I mean, that was up until Verlander's start, that was probably the best pitching performance of the year.
Yes, I would argue yes. Before that, it was the Lucchese game, and then it was the Senga game, and then it was the Verlander game. And yeah, no, it was he struck out
against the Rays.
He struck out 10 Rays batters. It's the best offense in Major League Baseball. He struck out 12, which is a career high for him and the most strikeouts ever by a Japanese-born Mets pitcher. So that's very cool. And the Mets have had a fair number of Japanese-born pitchers in their history. So it's not like he's only competing with like two other guys. Like, that's a pretty historic achievement. Yeah, so it was exciting. I still think, like, when it comes to Senga, I think that I think we have to expect some inconsistency, which is essentially what a third starter is, right? Like, there are times where he looks like an ace, and there are times when he looks a little more human than that. And that's kind of what a third starter is. And so I think we can't expect to see that type of thing all the time from him, but you get it once in a while. And when you get it, it's really magical.
According to Sarah Lang, his ghost fork is the hardest pitch to hit in the major leagues.
That does not surprise me one bit. Yeah.
Like, it induces.
That does seem to be its whole thing.
Yeah, like, it induces the weakest contact in the major leagues by a wide margin. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah, that's not surprising. The issue is obviously is always going to be his command of it.
Command, yeah.
He doesn't know where it's going half the time. But when he can command it, that he is absolutely lethal. And yeah, it's special to watch when he's
nice
when
season
he's
prediction
game.
Is still looking good.
Yeah, no, it really is, Linda. It really is. Might come true. It's true right now, is it not?
It is. I think it is.
Yes. So Linda predicted that Kodai Senga would lead the team in strikeouts. And right now that's looking pretty good still. I both hope it's true and hope it's not true.
Yeah, the other two just want to start striking out the world. I won't be that upset about it.
You can feed your ambition.
You can find your balance.
You can focus on your craft.
You can work smarter. Make business energy effortless with You Energy. Get fast, tailored quotes, smart solutions to keep on top of your bills, and all your utilities in one place. Get a quote now at youenergy.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply. Full details can be found online.
This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey! Wait up! Sergey!
Carl! Why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running.
Yeah, but what are you running from? The cops.
No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going to need a better alibi than that, bro. Hey? I'll get your passport and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
This is Emma.
Hiya.
Emma works at McDonald's in Merthyr Tydfil. She's a shift manager, a vital part of the team.
Well, I try.
But more importantly, Emma's a mum of three. So when she decided to come back to work, Emma needed hours that fitted with her kids' school days.
I really did.
So we did what we could to make that happen.
And it helped a lot.
Well, you're part of our family too, Emma.
Aw, thanks.
Let's balance life and work together. Apply today at mcdonalds.co.uk/jobs.
And now, for today's fun football scores. Nerves nil, friends made 11.
Goals 4, giggles 17.
Wheelchair access 1, feeling left out, 0.
Celebrations 3, high fives 21.
McDonald's Fun Football. Free football coaching for all kids aged 5 to 11. Search McDonald's Football to find out more.
The other bit of Mets news this week that may have gotten lost in the shuffle with everything that's been going on the field, but we don't want to lose it in the shuffle of this podcast because this is a very important bit of news for this podcast, which is that both the Mets and the Yankees at long last have added locker room facilities for female employees, which is something that... to quote,
you may have been today years old you found out
they did not
that
have
if
one.
You were an on-field trainer for the Mets and you identified as female, that you wouldn't have a locker room available for you, but now you do. So cool.
When the Buck quote was good too about that,
something that should have been done a long time ago.
Yes.
That sums it up.
Yep.
Both Buck Showalter, which is nothing more needs to be said. You guys, we will link the article for this in the show notes and the tweets, and you should check it out. Elizabeth Benn is the header photo for this article. So that made me smile to see that. finally, this is one of those like no brainers where you're like, they didn't already have that. Come on.
Easy W.
I'm pretty sure we talked about this in the Oakland Coliseum like 2 years ago on this podcast, or at least it feels like 2 years ago. I don't know if it actually was, but it's also one of those things
that is such a major obstacle to like real inclusivity and like real equity for female employees or potential employees, you know, to be able to go into a workplace that is built for you. That's the kind of thing where if you don't have that, you're going to lose out on people who deserve their jobs. And that sucks and is the opposite of inclusive. So thank you to the Mets for no longer being the opposite of inclusive.
So that's a perfect segue. The opposite of inclusive is a perfect segue to our next topic, which is
the opposite of the opposite of the opposite of inclusive,
which is the Dodgers Pride Night fiasco. If you've been living under a rock for the past week, the Dodgers announced, I guess, when was it that they put out the statement? Like last week, like earlier this week. The Dodgers,
just like 3 or 4 days ago.
Yeah. The Dodgers rescinded an invitation to their Pride Night to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who are a well-known San Francisco order of queer and trans nuns. They use Catholic imagery in their dress. And that group is like really well known for its community work in the LGBTQ community. And the Dodgers just decided to disinvite them because Marco Rubio and a couple of other people were upset about it. It was basically the Catholic League, which is like Marco Rubio and like one other guy.
It really is one of those organizations that like moves around millions of dollars, but it's like a 60-year-old who's been at this for 20 years.
Exactly. And like, you know, obviously none of these people part of the Los Angeles Dodgers community, right?
Yeah,
these are
on.
Like outside forces raising a fuss about like wokeness or whatever. And
when they didn't like it in the first place anyway.
Right.
It wasn't like everyone else was like, okay, it's like, all right, well, then we won't, you know, make a fuss about your Pride Night. No, they're going to whine no matter what. But they wanted to give a little extra bonus whine.
Exactly. So in response to these complaints about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence being included in the Dodgers Pride Night, the Dodgers said the following in a statement in part. Given the strong feelings of people who have been offended by the sisters' inclusion in our evening in an effort to not distract from the great benefits we have seen over the years of Pride Night, we are deciding to remove them from this year's group of honorees. So I guess the Dodgers just thought they could sneak this in there and nobody would notice it.
It also seems like, hold on to your hat, I missed this one earlier, but like it could have been Rob Manfred's idea.
Ooh.
Like it appears that they had gone to Rob Manfred first, which like that tracks, man. That tracks so much.
That
Rob Manfred would absolutely be sitting there like, yeah, sure thing, Mr. Rubio, definitely. Oh, drag nuns, that sounds icky.
That's like, offensive. I don't
Jesus
like
Christ,
that.
You idiot.
Yeah. So I think, you know, like most people, like I think the Dodgers just like they were somehow blindsided by the backlash to this.
Well, I think because part of the in hockey, they were able to get away with it. They all canceled their Pride nights and they were like, oh, people are, you know, religious beliefs, blah, blah, blah. So they canceled their Pride nights. They canceled their Pride jerseys. And there was pushback, but it wasn't anything that was enough to make them change their minds. So I think like other leagues were watching that and seeing if they could get away with it too. So I feel like maybe this was just another organization testing the waters to see what the response would be, and good for everybody to, you know, actually call them out on it and hold them accountable for it, because that is not what happened in the NHL.
Yeah. So people got understandably very pissed off that the Dodgers did this. because, you know, it's a slap in the face to the LGBT community on LGBTQ community on Pride, during Pride. It's a slap in their face, and people reacted obviously very negatively to this. And so as a result, the Dodgers, well, first of all, the Dodgers did one of those, like, we didn't realize people would be so mad. And it's like,
yeah, come on.
And they're like, we're working very closely with the group to find a way to make this right.
Yeah, okay.
It turns out, like, guess how you make it right.
Yeah. So after, obviously, a lot of people gave them pushback on social media, spoke out about it, wrote, the fans wrote lots of emails to the Dodgers about this. And then things, other things started happening, like LA Pride pulled out of Pride Night. So when you get, like, local Pride groups pulling out of your Pride Night because you did Pride Night poorly, like, I think you probably should reevaluate your priorities. And so then they just literally earlier this evening, like an hour before we started recording, they released another statement saying that they were re-inviting the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They say, quote, after much thoughtful feedback from our diverse communities, honest conversations within the Los Angeles Dodgers organizations, and generous discussions with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, the Los Angeles Dodgers would like to offer our sincerest apologies to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, members of the LGBTQ plus community, and their friends and families. We have asked the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to take their place on the field at our 10th annual LGBTQ plus Pride Night on June 16th. So they've reinvited the sisters, which is great. And it's awesome to see that, you know, the pushback worked and they were shamed into doing the right thing. But it kind of goes to show that, like, this was always about money for them. If they didn't get this backlash, this would have, they thought that they could, again, they thought that they could sneak this in without anybody noticing. And they would have gone right ahead and done that if they didn't get so much pushback from folks who would have participated in Pride otherwise. But they want that sweet, sweet ticket money. So.
Yeah, like, we know how they really feel at this point.
Exactly. The damage, they already showed their ass. They can't unshow it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, this is the like really cynical side of Pride, that it's become, like, a lot of it has become this, like, corporate thing. Yay, capitalism.
Yep.
And it's like this rainbow capitalism. And it just goes to show that MLB teams are absolutely not allies. They will, like, they will, like, basically kneecap Pride if they think that it will still bring in the money without pissing off Marco Rubio,
which makes the presence of folks like Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence so much more important, because yes, they are a great example of a local organization that does two things. And one is that they completely reject that entire, like, market type approach. Like, they're not selling to anybody. They're doing their thing. And their thing is, the other thing, it's work. It's like, they're doing the work. They're not raising awareness. They're not, you know, making merch. They're, like, out, like, literally on the streets at times, like, hitting the pavement, doing the work.
Yeah. Like, they're not doing this for shock value. Yeah. They're doing this because it's their community. And that's who the, and, like, that's who they're serving. And, like, it's just ridiculous. And it was upsetting to see the Dodgers cave to bigots, who, like Maggie said, were never going to be satisfied by, like, you think Marco Rubio is suddenly going to show up and, like, with a rainbow flag on Pride Night as long as the sisters aren't there?
Like, no.
Absolutely not. These are people that if you give them an inch, they will take a mile. They are seeing what they can get away with. They will stop at nothing. They will continue to find things to be upset about. That's their whole deal.
And as a Catholic, this goes against all of Jesus's teachings.
Yes.
And I don't understand why people keep associating religion with this. Like, did you like, you say you're all, you know Christ follower? Well, Christ would be the first one out there with the Sisters of the Perpetual Indulgence.
100%. My parents and I had a very similar conversation last weekend when they were here visiting DC, you know, for that terrible rain out Mets Nats game. But we went to, you know, the local bagel shop, on, I guess it was Saturday. Down on the same block as the bagel shop is a restaurant that always has drag brunch. And, you know, they've been having drag brunch for years without issue. Of course, recently it's on somebody's list. Proud Boys, some terrible organization. It's on their list. And so protesters have started showing up on the street outside the restaurant every weekend. Terrible, awful, hateful people showing up every weekend. And what's been awesome to see is that my neighborhood where I live, my community, has shown up and made like physical barriers of human beings between the protesters and the restaurant. Like, there are people who every weekend without fail, they show up and they just stand there to make sure the protesters can't get too close to the restaurant, which is awesome. But it shouldn't be necessary, obviously. And so, you know, of course, the protesters have these signs. They're, you know, they're the Westboro Baptist Church style. I don't know if they're actually Westboro Baptist Church people, but they're those style signs, the showing the things that like that are terrible, terrible, hateful things on the signs, but make reference to religion. Right. And my dad, we were walking by, and my dad, you know, was Catholic for his whole life. We were walking by, and my dad said, Jesus would be having drag brunch right now.
Yeah, he would.
Very true.
And it's like, preach it, Dad. And like, that's exactly it. Like, it's just, it's so horrible and hypocritical, and it's so frustrating. And, it sucks that the Dodgers like even thought that they could get away with this. And like, yeah, it's been made right to a certain extent to the sisters, which is good, but you can't like I said, they showed their ass and they can't unshow it. Like, you know what they stand for. They stand for money.
Mm-hmm.
MLB teams are not allies, unfortunately.
No, the players have to be. So it would be nice if more players spoke out.
Would be great if players spoke out. Instead, you have
now
players
taking applications for Mentions of the Week.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a feeling Canna might get one.
I was going to say, it can't just be Mark Canna out here supporting Pride.
And Ty Walker.
Yeah. We're going to be paying attention to you, Mets, in June, who's very vocal about Pride and who's not.
Probably no one who won't be.
Brooks Raley. Anyway, before we move on to walk-off wins, we wanted to shout out the fact that Maggie is going to be on opposition territory with Jeff Warren dropping tomorrow, Tuesday. So by the time you hear this podcast, that podcast will probably also be out.
Ooh,
you should catch Maggie with Jeff. Jeff is always just a joy to chat with. I've been on opposition territory a couple times too. And it's always just a fantastic time.
Yeah, he is like the only good Phillies fan. And he is very good. But yeah, no, it's always a great show to be on. I talk a lot about some of the things, same things that we are talking about here, giving some kind of bird's eye view stuff, because talking to a lot of like at a bunch of Phillies fans. But yes, if you want some Apato doubleheader, definitely check that out. Opposition territory.
Are they bitter about David Robertson? Because somebody jumped into Allison's mentions.
But they were nice. Like, I bet he was nice about it. I mean,
no, this is not the same person who was in my mentions.
No, yeah, because you got... I don't know. Should we call a shot?
I don't know if that person has a podcast, but I don't think I'd go on it.
They do. Podcast. We're not gonna. I'm gonna be the bigger person, yes, and not name and shame. But yeah, no. It's certain Phillies fans like are very upset about David Robertson for some reason.
This was a good natured. Sure, wish we've gotten that when he was around. And I'm like, yeah, I bet you do,
which is totally fine, because there's like, you know, the reverse of that happens to the Mets all the time. So I know that feeling. I totally get it.
I know of what you speak.
Yes. So yeah. Before we end the show this week, we will do walk off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk off win for this week?
I have kind of a doubleheader walk off win of my own, which is, so on Saturday I had two wonderful social engagements. And the first was my mom took me to New York City Ballet, amazing. Which she does every year for my birthday. And it's always amazing. And we saw, if there's any ballet nerds in our listenership, we saw the new Justin Peck, and it was like with this, very kind of iconic Aaron Copland music. And it was amazing. And it was actually, I mean, even if you're not a ballet nerd, it's a really good kind of fun entry level, like modern ballet that is not like very like kind of arch and esoteric. It's just really fun. So it's Copland dance episodes. And it was just lovely. And it was always wonderful to go with my mom. I mean, we've literally been doing it since I was like a teenager. So very important thing for us to do together. And then afterwards, I saw a friend of the show, Ruth, who is in from Toronto. And we were supposed to go to the baseball game, which we did not because it was pouring buckets. But we grabbed a drink in Midtown and saw a couple other Twitter folks. And it was just a lovely way to spend an evening. And it's always fun to connect with online people in real life, especially when they are just as wonderful as they are. So that was just an excellent way to spend a Saturday.
I saw all of Ruth's photos from when she was in New York, and I got so much FOMO. I'm so happy that she got to see so many folks that we know and love in the Mets and New York baseball Twitter community. That was so happy to see. Yeah, I hope she had a good trip. She got two baseball games on Sunday.
In one day. I was very impressed. I will also say her eyebrow or her eyeliner game is even better in real life.
It always looks impeccable.
Like
it.
Incredible. It's the best eyeliner I've ever seen. So, yes.
Shout out to Ruth and to the New York City Ballet. Linda Servich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I was not able to see Ruth because I had a bridal shower on Sunday, which was in a backyard.
And of course, so where was it?
There was a tent, thankfully.
Okay.
But I did get to wear my fancy hat again. I was so excited because that was the tea party themed. It was actually really cute. They had like the little finger sandwiches and scones. And so I think it was her fiance's family. They bought a hat box of all the grandmother's old hats. So they passed out all the old hats. So it was really cool to see like all the old styles and stuff. It was really nice. And then my cousin's getting married in Philly in June. So I was like, oh, I could go to the Phillies game if they're playing the Mets. And they're playing the Mets the weekend after I'm there. So I will not be going to the Phillies game when I'm there in June. But so that was my first walk-off win. But my second walk-off win is yesterday watching the Met game. After the game, I heard those notes I instantly recognized of them playing LA Woman after the victory, which they did in 1999 because of Mojo Rising. And I just started sobbing. Because that was the team that made me first love the Mets, that 1999 team. And to remember again, like, why I love this team. And, you know, like, it was a really, like, this season has been miserable, like, no fun. And then just to have that fun back and to have them, like, bring back Mojo Rising, it just like it hit me like, oh, I really do love this team. And then apparently Thomas messaged me, said they played Taking Care of Business right after it, which is synonymous with the 06 team. And so it seemed like they were trying to bring all the magic back that they could possibly find and keep the vibes going. So I really hope I do love, you know, New York groove after wins, but It was just, I don't know, LA woman hit me that it bought it all back. And, you know, maybe they can capture that magic that 99 team had, because they started off poorly after a big off season and all of Bobby Valentine's coaches got fired, and then they went on an incredible run. They were behind the Braves. So it's like, you know, history's kind of repeating itself here. It just made me so emotional hearing it. Just brought me back to, you know, hearing it at Shea reverberating around and it, like, all those memories. So thank you, Mets. Can you play it again for me? Maybe when I'm there, even if I do start sobbing if I see. Even if they do keep it up with both, with taking care of, I was never a fan of taking care of business, because, like, they're not taking care of any business. They're losing. I know that has a special place in a lot of fans' hearts, so I won't take that from them. And I also like that the eighth inning sing along is Backstreet Boys now.
Yes.
I also, that alone would be a walk off win for me, honestly.
The voting on the eighth inning song is really good. I like that.
Yeah. And Escobar and Beatty were singing along to Backstreet Boys.
Yes, that was really perfect. That was, like, a very wholesome moment.
Yes. So the vibes are back. The vibes are all the way back.
Vibes are back. And this is not to go back to the not to circle back to the Mets segment, but, like, you kind of reminded me, Linda, of a point I was going to make when we were talking about the Mets and, like, the vibes and, like, oh no, they're pulling us back in. But it's like, I think that it cannot be emphasized enough how much the National League is a pile of garbage.
Yeah.
And so all the Mets have to do is play, like, okay, and they probably will win a wild card. Like, the Mets have been about as bad as you can imagine for this team. Like, when you construct this team on paper, what is the worst possible outcome? Basically what already happened. And all it took was a good week and they're back in playoff position, because the rest of the National League is a steaming hot pile of garbage.
Oh, now the Cardinals are on a run.
Yeah, whatever. I will ignore that. I will choose.
That's not our problem.
No.
Somebody else's problem.
And even the Braves, who I, like, you know, I'm not, we talked about this and how the Braves are basically gone at this point. I'm still considering them gone for my own, like, mental health. Like, I can't scoreboard watch the Braves when, like, the Mets are still behind
one
them.
One never should.
But something that I think is important to point out is that, like, the Mets were up until recently in a pretty terrible pitching situation. The Braves are now in an even worse pitching situation than the Mets, because they have two major starting pitchers hurt, and they, up until I think they are going to call up Dylan Dodd to pitch some more, but they were pitching two bullpen games a week. Oof. That is just not sustainable. Like, the Mets were at least, like, yeah, they were forfeiting every time they pitched David Peterson, and yeah, they were throwing, like, Joey Lucchese, Jose Budo, like, that cycle of guys out there, and it wasn't great. But, like, the Braves were currently throwing two bullpen games a week to try to get through this stretch without two of their main starters. Now, the starters that they do have that are healthy have been excellent, and that's part of why the Braves are where they are, in addition to their incredible lineup. But, like, keep in mind that the Braves are not exactly in a great situation right now.
Well, they're also, I mean, look, I fully expect the Braves to win the division, but their lead isn't half of what the Mets' lead was for much of last year.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, and again, we all know how that ended. I think this will end the same way, but it's not like they've run away with it.
Right. Exactly. So, not trying to pretend like I'm not, like, being like, we can win the NL East, guys, let's do it. But I am saying that, like, the Braves are not impenetrable. Like, it's, they have issues too. They're probably not as pronounced, and they're probably not enough that the Mets can make up this deficit. But it's,
I mean, the Mets would have to really nail the trade deadline, and the Braves would have to whiff.
Yep.
Which are both possible things to happen, yep. If unlikely.
Yeah.
If unlikely, given precedent of last year's trade deadline. But yeah, unlikely. Possible. Anyway, so my walk-off win is also Mets-related and vibe-shift-related this week, which is just, I mean, it's not just this moment. We already kind of alluded to, like, how Pete's vibes go, the Mets go, and my walk-off win is kind of a testament to that. after Pete Alonso's walk-off homer, he got the usual on-field post-game interview from Steve Gelbs, and Pete always ends his post-game interviews, on-field interviews, with LFGM. He always says, like, LFGM guys, thanks for coming out. Like, he's always saying that. But this time he just dropped a let's fucking go Mets as loud as he could into the microphone on live television, and it injected so much life into my body.
Even the crowd, like, started cheering, like, screaming.
Oh, it was so funny. And also, like, the Mets are undefeated since he did that, by the way.
Yes, I'm keeping
it
track.
It is true.
Undefeated, and Pete pisses off the FCC.
And certain era. New York, certain boomer New York sports writers who I will not
name. No one tell Marco Rubio about it.
Yeah, no one tell Marco Rubio. That Pete said fuck on TV.
Like, the censors were
not the
ready.
F-word.
Are they not on a 5-second delay anymore?
No, I'm sure they are.
I don't know. I mean, like, I heard it on TV.
I heard so. It. My mouth dropped open. And
I wasn't paying attention.
F-word.
So they didn't have time to censor it. Like, you know. Then
he was so high on cold medicine. He was probably like, you know what? Woo!
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's part of it too. It's just like the fact that Pete accomplished this and continued to carry the team while he was feeling horrible. I just felt so inspired by that, because, like, that during that same time period, as you may recall, I also had a terrible cold. So I was like, if Pete Alonso can hit a 3-run walk-off bomb while feeling this crappy, I surely can get out of bed.
Well, everybody was like, whoa, like, somebody
if Pete
please-
can hit a home run, I can stay awake to watch it.
Exactly.
Well, of course, there was the pearl clutching, like, oh, won't somebody please think of the children? It's like, you say, don't repeat that word, and that's the end of it.
Exactly.
Put the children to bed, people.
It was like 10, it was almost 11 o'clock at night. What children were up watching
that? Which, to be fair, there's nothing wrong with keeping your children up until 11 o'clock to watch an amazing baseball game. Just like there's nothing wrong with dropping an F-bomb when the moment calls for it.
Yeah. It's just a well-placed F-bomb.
Yeah.
It was.
That's what I say to my kids. Is it a hurtful word? I don't think so. Not in the context.
Right.
No.
So, yes.
As the
local parent, I say it's fine.
Yes, I defer to Maggie, local parent.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm just absolutely begging the Mets to extend this man, like, post haste.
You said,
please.
He was so earnest too. Like, thanks for coming. Thanks for sticking with us. We really appreciate it. Like, he really does just, like Maggie said, he's the vibe of the team and the fan base.
He and Lindor have been so, like, good with that this week. Just, like, thanks for sticking it out with us. He and Lindor have both been saying that.
Yeah.
And the post-game interview vibes in general this week. Obviously, the Mets have played a lot of exciting games with a lot of, like, on-field post-game interview moments, worthy moments. So it's been very fun. But, like, just the content has been incredible, because you got the Pete F-bomb. And then last night, Francisco Lindor was being interviewed by ESPN, and Justin Verlander came running onto the screen and went, stop asking him so many questions, come on! And, like, basically dragged Lindor away.
Yeah, Justin Verlander single-handedly ruining ESPN's postgame was a highlight.
Chef's kiss. It was like Justin Verlander handshake emoji. Everyone watching, wanting ESPN's broadcast to end. Like, it was so perfect. So that's my walk-off win. It's just like Pete being Pete, and these post-game interviews, and just, like, the general vibe shift of this team, and that moment sort of encompassing it all. So that does it for the show this week. I'm glad we could finally have a mostly happy show. You can go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can support our work by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. Please consider supporting the show. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servish.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you should find us right there. Please rate and review the podcast. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there's no crime.